This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasobi. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, joining me this Friday afternoon. How are you today?
Good afternoon, George. Mira. I'm good. I'm very privileged. It is only a few days after Deepavali and you're here.
Yes, I had to, George.
I know, okay.
How could I have let you do this show on your own?
I know. You're so
kind. It
will
be that dream come true moment for you.
Pull you away from your family. But it's been a great day to come in, right?
Absolutely.
So is there anyone out there?
No.
You know, we're asking. It's probably just you and I in KL.
It seem like it. But you know what? We would love you to call because this is the one topic which whenever we do a show on your vision, we get a lot of callers or even SMSs because everyone's got some condition, the eye condition that they actually want to talk about. And the reason we're talking about your vision today is because it was World Sight Day Thursday, the 12th of October, and the theme being Make Vision Count. Now, I was really alarmed, George, about 253 million people live with vision impairment worldwide.
That's right. It's quite scary statistics.
It is.
Shocking.
And 36 million of them are blind. Mm-hmm. We have issues in Malaysia as well. So we have called in someone to tell
give us the Malaysian
perspective, Dr. Muiz Mahyudin. He is a consultant ophthalmologist and refractive surgeon from the Tun Hussein On National Eye Hospital. He's also vice president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology. Welcome to the show, Dr. Muiz. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks, Mira and George, for having me here.
You're welcome,
this wonderful day.
A little bird told us that you used to do radio in university.
So he's very used to it. It's like second nature.
No, it's been too long. Probably half the life would go.
But you were studying medicine, but you obviously had some interest in radio. What did you host or what sort of show did you actually host?
You were studying in New Zealand, in Otago, and...
You're hosting to the sheep.
I think the sheep appreciated more my
your sense
because
of
it was it was at 9 or 10 p.m. on a Friday night when no one actually listens to the radio.
That's what you think.
Okay.
You never know.
You probably have many fans out there still, you know, longing for you to come back.
It was just Malay songs.
In Otago,
we just played Malay songs for one hour. And by request of
the Malaysian
students and things like that. And we get call-ins as well.
See? Yeah. So they were listening.
Yeah, I know. All the way in the other side of the planet.
Absolutely. Okay, so now you're here.
Now in the real world.
Talk to us about blindness. Is that of concern in Malaysia? Do we have much statistics to show us how bad the situation is here in the country?
We don't have exact statistics because I guess most of the establishments which deal with blindness work in a very different...
There are many institutions.
Data
collection is probably not that accurate.
But we've got, actually, to be honest with you, we've got very fantastic support for the blind in Malaysia, even from Jabatan Kebajikan Masyarakat. You know, they have got supports and we've... Malaysian Association for the Blind. They're doing a great job with helping the blind people to get on their feet. So for me, as a person who always sees the blind, I feel there is no reason for a blind person to be, you know, stuck in a home, locked up in the room. You know,
right.
They can live. If you go anywhere, you know, the LRT station, MRT, you can see blind people just walking and they're just so comfortable.
Yeah.
Because we've prepared them for the real world, and we've looked at the infrastructures. If you look at the walkways for men,
seriously,
for the blind.
I mean, you're really saying that in Malaysia, in KL, for example,
that is because you haven't taken public transport. I have.
Well, there's hardly any pavement, you know. Sometimes.
Well, go check it out.
Okay, right. Sorry, I kind of barge in suddenly. I just thought, did I hear it correctly? No. I'm going to ask you this, right? You know, Mira was just asking, like, do we have any Malaysian statistics? Obviously, it's difficult. I mean, with any diseases, whenever we don't have data like that, what's your gut feelings about? You know, how many proportions of Malaysians actually have visual impairment and how many are actually blind? And what's the difference between these two?
Okay, I'll just put some definitions first, okay? Visual impairment is a vision of 624, the best corrected vision of 624 or worse. So
what does that mean?
What does that mean?
That's exactly where I'm going. Okay, if you imagine the
everybody
chart,
says 10-10, isn't yeah. it? 2020.
2020,
thank you.
Mirror settles for half of that. So that's
2020.
I'm sorry, I'm still in my head.
She's too much on her Maruku.
I've had too much curry. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay. 2020 is actually in feet. Because we are in Malaysia, we are working with meters. So okay. 6 meters is more or less equivalent to about 20 feet. So when you talk about 6 over 24, usually the easiest way to imagine this, if you look at the doctor's chart standing 6 meters away, you can only read the top half.
Uh-huh.
Best corrected, that means with everything we put on you, we put the spectacles on you, and still that's the best you're able to read. That's visual impairment.
Okay, so despite the spectacle correction, your vision is still impaired in that sense.
624.
Yes. 624.
Means visual impairment.
Yes, or okay. 624. Then we go to blindness. Okay, most people understand blindness is someone who just says, sees black. Can't see anything, dark, total darkness. But that's not true. By law, that blindness is 660 or worse. So basically, the person can see the largest alphabet, you know, that single alphabet at the top of the chart, mm-hmm. maybe an A or a T sometimes. That's the only thing or worse they can see. And all right. Best corrected. That means it doesn't count. If Mira, you take off your spectacles and you can't see, that doesn't count. Okay, you have to be... corrected with your spectacles and anything else. That's and another thing that always people forget, that another definition for blindness is being your visual field is 20 degrees. This happens, and like, you know, if you look at now, you can actually see from, you know, as left as possible, yep. and as right as you can as possible. But a person who has, for example, glaucoma can only see tunnel. Just something just within 20 degrees of their sight.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 20 degrees from perpendicular to them.
20 degrees of vision means basically, just take it easy. It's just like tunnel vision. Just like it's like looking through a telescope.
Tunnel.
Yeah.
So 20 degrees to the left and the right.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's it.
That's it. So they can be actually seeing perfect straight. Whatever small vision left they have, they might be seeing perfect. But because they can't see peripherally, mm-hmm. they are technically blind.
Okay. Mm.
Okay. So I see. So I would have thought blind meaning you can't see anything.
It's pitch black. There's no such thing. No. That's you just don't see anything at all. Mm. I mean, obviously, thank you very much for those definition. Presumably, these are legal definitions because there are some legal implications that you are blind, right?
Yes.
I mean, those legal implications presumably is like your occupation or your driving and that sort of thing?
Yeah. In most of parts of the world, the biggest issue is with regards to driving. Okay? With work-wise, it's not such a big deal. We try as hard as we can to help those blind to work. You know, like my hospital, we have a lot of blind people working, and they are from visually impaired to blind people working, and it doesn't, there's many jobs suitable for them.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to driving, that is a bit of a sensitive issue.
And who's enforcing, really? I've always wondered this.
Right.
I mean, you may at the National Heart Eye Hospital say, you know, you cannot drive because you are, by definition, you are blind. But what's stopping people from doing it?
Unfortunately, in Malaysia, the 20 degrees of visual field, there's no law for that.
It's no prohibitive law to stop you.
You can be driving with perfect vision, looking straight.
Wow.
And,
you just have to move your head a lot more.
The society has been trying to talk, do dialogues. It's just that it's probably, number one, it's probably a bit difficult to implement, to test. And we're probably worried that we do catch people with those kind of problems.
In other countries, do they constantly examine you, or they just expect people to volunteer their visual impairment to the authority? And what happens if, let's say, you're caught having you're driving, but it's against the law with JPJ's kind of regulation?
Based on trust,
Based on trust,
okay.
Yeah.
In for example, I studied in New Zealand, what they do is they've got mandatory 5-yearly eye checks for renewing your license. Every time you need to renew your license, there's this test. You'll be looking through a box. And the beauty is they actually do test you for your visual peripheries, because there'll be lights blinking left and right, and you're supposed to say which one blinked. Was it the left one or the right one? So that they can detect if you have a peripheral vision defects. And obviously, if you got colorblind as well, it's all in one kind of
test. Okay, yes. Done by the road transport.
Well, it's good not just for the general public safety. I mean, it will detect huge number of people who may have reversible causes of visual impairment, presumably to kind of like a refer to the doctors.
I mean, I think you should just immediately take away the driving license. I'm being very harsh here, but you know, as soon as you're diagnosed, and it's like in the UK. If you are diagnosed with epilepsy, you get your driving license taken away.
In Malaysia, what happens?
I'm not sure.
But once you make a diagnosis that someone is visually impaired or blind, I mean, you tell the person to go to authority. If the person doesn't, what happens?
There's no real route for us to report to the JPG with regards to
So how many of these people with visual impairments have reversible condition, and how many of them are permanently impaired?
Okay, reversible conditions, I would say the most common, worldwide, number one cause of blindness is cataracts. Mm-hmm. Full stop. Anywhere in the world.
Cause of blindness.
Yes, and that is what we call as reversible blindness, because if we do the cataract operation,
they are restored,
yes.
Are you saying that many people are not getting it restored?
Most people, whether they have poor access to health, whether they know what they're having, you know.
They're in denial.
Or they are just refuse to get treatment because, you know, scared of the knife and things like that. Yeah, that's probably. That's reversible blindness. I'll just quickly say, number one causes of irreversible blindness in the world is glaucoma.
Glaucoma.
Okay. But Malaysia is a bit special.
Okay.
Number one irreversible cause of blindness in Malaysia is diabetes.
Diabetes. you see Mira's kind of like raise the eyebrow because Mira has a lot of bone to pick about diabetes, right?
Yeah. And the fact that we're the fattest nation in Southeast Asia. I mean, what do you expect, right?
Yes.
My goodness. So, and when you say, the minute you say diabetes, I mean, I'm thinking this problem is just going to get really bad.
Potentially get really bad, because it's just not, we don't have enough awareness. I mean, even the GPs themselves know that what diabetes, they try to treat diabetes, but we do not see enough diabetes patients being screened in our hospitals for annually.
Yeah.
And to have it controlled and managed.
Yeah. You know, you probably touch on two issues that the listeners out there who are probably interested, you know, diabetes, hundreds and thousands of people listening out there, they're worried about their sight, and then they're probably going to call in to ask you, you know, what are the ways that, you know, people treat this and for them to protect their vision. Presumably the most important way is to keep your glucose low most of the time and under control, right? Yeah. I'm sure they're going to call in quite
quickly.
Are
we very unique from the rest of the world, or are there other people like us?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about the rest of the world, but I don't know why we decide to be unique in that aspect.
You
can be number one or number two
diabetes induced blindness is pretty bad. And also, I'm sure some people don't call in about cataract later.
Cataracts, glaucoma, I think age-related macular degeneration. Is that a leading cause of vision loss among those 50 years and above as well?
Age-related or ARMD, we most call it. It's there. It's real in Malaysia, but it's still not one of the things that we see the most.
Okay, it's diabetes.
Yeah, it's diabetes. And then, you know what? We're going to get really quite a large phone calls. Even though it's a quiet Friday, you know, that probably touched on the raw nerve in a lot of Malaysians. Yeah.
Give us a call, the number 0377109000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. I'm sure you want to know what that link is between diabetes and your eyesight and what's really making us all sort of soon have this problem of vision impairment, mm-hmm. and which could possibly lead to blindness as well, isn't it, Dr. Moores,
yes,
going forward. And the other thing also we will touch on when we come back is, of course, the screens and our children and us who spend tons of time on the screens and how that's going to impact our sight. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi, together with Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. It is a Friday and it's our Doctor in the House show. And we have Dr. Muiz Mahyuddin, who's a vice president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology. He's also a consultant ophthalmologist and refractive surgeon at the Tun Hutinon National Eye Hospital. Did the National Eye Hospital bit just come in to that whole Tun Hutinon? We always call it the Tun Hutinon Eye Hospital.
Oh, no. It's been 30 years now.
It's always been the National Eye Hospital, like the National Heart Institute.
I'm sure it is a center of excellence in Klang Valley and also in the country, right? Yes. I mean, how many kind of numbers of cases or complex eye problems do you deal with in that hospital?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. I think we see about 200-300 cases per day. Not that many compared to some of the government hospitals. You can used to see about 600-700.
But your tertiary referral center, that means that, if you have more complex cases from GHKL, UM, do you kind of like receive more complex cases in Tun Hutinon Hospital?
Not really, actually, because we are... Tun Hutinon is more or less a private hospital. So we deal things quite separately than from the government hospital.
So you're vice president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology, and for World Sight Day last week, I know you guys had something really big in Kuala Terengganu. And I remember when I tried to find out a little bit more, I was thinking to myself, why is this big? You screened like 1,000 people from around the states. They had eye checks and all of that. But why Kuala Terengganu of all places? I mean, you could have gone to Kota Bharu. George comes from Kota Bharu.
They go there for the Keropok Leko.
Why Kuala Terengganu?
The Keropok Leko not good enough answer.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, anyhow. The society tries to do something every year with the World Sight Day. I'll give an example. Like the last year, we didn't do a screening, but we spent a few money actually, to promote diabetic retinopathy to the public. So we put in lots of ads around and try to educate doctors and public on diabetic retinopathy. That was last year's goal. The year before, we went to screen refugees in Klang for eyes. I think the year before that, we were in the Orang Asli in Perak. We were screening Orang Asli in Perak. So we try to do different things. So this year...
Who decides what themes you guys go for? And also, good question, why KT?
We've got a committee this year, and we thought of doing something, and one of our committee member Tato Johari, who is based in Bangi, talked to someone in the Yayasan Diraja Sultan Wizan. Immediately they were very keen to work with us. They said they really wanted to help people in Terengganu, and they made very, very big efforts to actually bring those who should be screened.
All right. So in conjunction with Royal Foundation, right? Because at one point I was just getting a bit jealous because in Kota Bharu we have equal problems, East Coast, of diabetic problems. And then because, everyone can tell that anyone who goes to East Coast will know that food is very sweet. And then diabetic problems is really prevalent in both Terengganu and Kelantan. I was thinking that maybe along that line. So what sort of complicated cases did you guys see?
How did last Thursday go?
We saw about 1,020 plus patients. I mean, people who came for screening. And I'll tell you one thing: I'm not too worried about the food. I think they are also blessed with sunshine.
I was going to ask you.
They were blessed with sunshine, which comes in ultraviolet, and all the damages that ultraviolet does to our eyes. So we saw cataracts, and pterygiums, where you get the skin coming in from the side of the eyes. Those were the main ones.
And the reason being?
Too much sunshine.
Too much sunshine.
And if you do, quite a big number of the needy people are actually fishermen.
Right.
And you can imagine that fishermen has the most, you know?
Exposure.
Yeah.
I mean, so are you saying that, you know, so, I mean, obviously we always talk about too much exposure to sunshine, you worry about skin cancer. Presumably it's something that many people don't know. Too much sunshine can actually predispose you to cataract as well.
Yes.
How much is too much?
Well, I always tell my patients, like, you know, it doesn't matter ever how old you are. If you get into the sun, you should be putting on sunglasses.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So those sunglasses, not just looking cool, you know, you actually really protect your eyesight.
Talking about looking cool, actually some of the elderly who should be wearing, they feel a bit...
embarrassed.
Correct. To be wearing because cool shades. Yeah. Because then people will say, you know, you're too old for shades. But actually it's wrong.
Okay. So from what age should we be wearing sunglasses?
It doesn't matter. I think the moment you can get your kids to be wearing sunglasses, if it's in the sun, you know, just get them at least to wear a cap, a hat, and things like that. Yeah?
Okay, I'm coming to see you in maybe a year. I've never worn sunglasses in my entire life. I'm in trouble.
I'm in trouble is that I am a urologist, obviously operating all the time, and the exposure from radiation, I was told that is pretty bad for the eyesight.
What radiation?
Because when we do stone operations, we have to actually do it with the guidance of the X-ray. And then the amount of radiation that I expose myself to probably can glow me in the dark, really. Yeah.
Really? Is that something to be concerned about?
Yeah, one of the occupational hazards of urologists, orthopedic surgeons, is because when they try, they'll be operating on, you know, x-rays continuous. It's continuous. It's not like one.
Yeah, it says on a daily basis you get exposure.
Yeah, it does.
So, I mean, what sort of risk do I have with that sort of like exposure?
For
the eyes. You know, apart from people say your thyroid, you protect your thyroid. And then next thing I have to do is wearing sunglasses in the hospital when I do the operation. Is that necessary?
Actually, there are a lot of goggles available. Safety goggles. The ones they do have UV protection, even though they are not shaded. Mm. They're just transparent. They do have, what do you call it?
UV filters,
yeah. And I think X-rays are quite, you know, they just move in a straight line. And they don't bounce too much. So if you're protected from the area you're using, then that's fine.
It's all right. Okay. Yeah. You know, on the flip side, myopia, which is short-sightedness in children, is very common in Asian countries.
Correct.
Pretty much, very much linked to the Chinese in terms of ethnicity, because it's something in your genes.
No, it's probably the mother's kind of like making sure that they study too much. My mother used to say, you watch the TV too close, you're going to get this. Or you read the books too close, you're going to get this.
Or you read in the dark.
How much of that is the myth? And because my mother was, I actually have not bad eyesight until I was like 47. And then I started, you know, when I was operating, I said, really can't see that well. Okay. And I started putting on these kind of like, you know, reading glasses. Essentially, my colleague told me that you're just old.
You are.
Am I teaching things?
You can run away from getting old with medicines, but with eyes won't lie.
Let's get back to the mothers, the children.
So
which one of that?
In the UK as well, myopia is on the rise, the short-sightedness among the children. And one of the things they feel is contributing to this is, of course, people who read a lot. And for those who, of course, spend a lot of time in front of their screens. And one of the reasons they say more and more children are getting myopia is because they are not out in the sun. Mm-hmm. And being in the sun reduces your chance of getting myopia. Now, on one hand, you're saying too much of the sun is not good. On the other hand, we're saying now our children are not going out enough, and does that mean they're all going to be short-sighted?
Okay, I think there are two components about being on the sun. So I'll just go back to the basics first, okay? In Asia, yes, there's a rise in people with myopia, people with spectacles. In Singapore, it's supposed to be about 90%.
What?
90%. So it's something that their government has taken into action. And I'll get back to that as well. And for me, I'm quite fortunate that one of my colleagues in Taiwan is probably the leading man in the fight against myopia in Taiwan. So he's taught me a lot about this myopia thing. So there are three things that actually can reduce your... Three things proven by science. Papers that say that it can reduce the progression of myopia. Number one is 40 minutes a day outside. The word was outside.
So wear sunglasses or not?
They said outside. They didn't say about something about the sun.
Okay.
So I think because they've said that maybe it's about focusing in the distance, looking in the far, relaxing your eyes.
Okay. All right. Just not
rather than
not
the
put
sun.
Your eyes too strain on like objects that is kind of like fixed or on screen and that sort of thing. And so mummy is quite right then. So all say, you know, don't read the books too close and TV is too close and that sort of thing.
Sorry, did you go through the three yet? Sorry, okay. I was distracted by a
number one is 40 minutes a day outside.
In the sun? Just outside.
Just outside.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Number two is drops, atropine drops.
Okay.
And number three is autokeratology. It's a special contact lens. So basically, the other two is not easily achievable.
Okay.
It's not, not economical as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So being outside is something that everyone... So with that in mind, the Singaporeans have actually made sure that every day they've got a session, 40-minute session of the class outside.
Oh, right, outside. Oh, yeah. that's quite proactive of them.
Yes, yeah.
So that, you know, well, presumably, apart from helping to reduce myopic kind of children, and presumably also get them all more active in outdoors.
So then my question is, what's the difference if you spend time outside and the light indoors?
You focus on different colors and, also far, near, and then you have all sorts of like exposure to visual stimulation, presumably, that has helped.
Because when we're in the small room or looking or reading, we're using certain muscles in the eye.
Right.
Because myopia is when, you know, our eyeballs are longer than what they're supposed to be. Okay, so there's some relations with the muscles overacting, overusing.
Right, right.
And what about those of us with myopia at 40?
Is that possible?
eyeball distortions, you know. And you know, as you mentioned just now, those special contact lenses are actually to help with the distortion of the eyeball. Am I correct?
Basically, it's supposed to... help with the relaxing the muscles as well.
Okay. So will that apply to the 40-year-olds as well who have,
they're
myopia?
Getting when they start.
Myopia
to get,
is you know, young person's disease, Mira.
Really? What George is getting now is what's called presbyopia. Uh-huh. Chinese call it lufa. Very popular, popular word. That's when you get both. Near and far-sighted problems.
Lo-far, lao-hua just means that, you know, you're old.
Old flowers. Okay, now I know. Yeah, you learn something new every day. I thought I already knew everything about...
The other thing which obviously many listeners might be interested in is the food, you know, because...
The diet.
Yeah, the diet. Everyone keeps going on about carrots and more carrots. How much is that is true? And apart from carrots, you know, what else actually is helpful to your eyes?
There are lots of supplements that have been proposed to be touted, but nothing really strong. But in the past, we've used nutberry and bilberry as sort of supplements for our patients. But if you look at it, it's more or less antioxidant
properties.
Antioxidant properties that they're helping.
So vitamin A, C, and E.
Yeah, more or less, but don't take it from me, lah. I didn't say it. I didn't say it on live radio.
I didn't say it on live radio.
You think that they say it's not? They just say that it's not level one evidence. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just say like what every doctor will say: just eat a balanced diet.
All right,
and whatever that means.
She noticed that.
She's been sitting with enough doctors.
She knows what the doctors come up with.
But from the eyesight, I always say that my patients do ask me this kind of questions, and for me personally, that I would say that lubricants for the eyes, eye drops, make you feel much, your eyes feel much better, feel much more comfortable than trying to eat, you know, carrots or juice and things like that. And it's instant gratification, instant soothing, because every one of us, you know, even I've seen in 14, 15 year olds with dry eyes, because we... the environment is just, you know, we are sitting in aircon, super cold.
Right.
You know, like I keep saying to my patients, the colder your aircon, the drier the air.
Mm.
So expect to have dry eyes. You don't have to be a 40-year-old to have dry eyes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. It's just our lifestyle today, isn't it? It's very different.
Yeah.
We have a question here from Mrs. Wong. I'll come back right after the market update and go through that question with you. We are discussing World Sight Day. In this year's theme is Make Vision Count. Dr. George Lee and Dr. Muiz Mayuddin in the studio with me. We'll come back and continue this discussion on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Doctor in the House, brought to you by AIA Vitality.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. George Lee joining me, consultant urologist, together with Dr. Muiz Mayuddin, who is the Vice President of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology. We are discussing World Sight Day, which was last Thursday, and the theme was Make Vision Count. So we're just sort of talking about the state of our eye health in Malaysia. I think what's interesting is you have reversible and irreversible vision problems. And the point that Dr. Muiz has actually made earlier is that one of the main causes of irreversible sight loss in Malaysia is due to diabetes. And we seem to be pretty unique compared to everywhere else in the world. Well, it makes sense because we are, of course, growing.
that's a very polite way of putting it. We're just growing.
Yeah. We're sweet and growing. and it's causing problems, right? Just not in terms of sight loss. It's just about everything. But anyway, we're going to be, if you have a question on your sight or your vision, give us a call. The number is 0377-109000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0187898899. Now, Mrs. Wong has taken the time to actually Facebook us and actually send her question through. She says she's 50 years old. She went for her eye checkup about 2 months ago because from time to time, she sees a ring of sparkling rays when she looks at things. At first, she thought it was the sun, but it happens at night as well. But the ring of rays is not permanent. It only lasts from, you know, a few minutes, probably about in an hour or so, and it will fade and it will disappear. So she went to the eye hospital, got the specialist to check her eyes. They used a machine to look into her eyes and said nothing was wrong. But this is bothering her. When the rays happen, it distracts her vision. It's like little diamonds, very sparkling, and she has to close her eyes to actually rest it. So she's not sure what's wrong. She's tried Googling. The closest she finds is actually a migraine possible cause, but she's had migraine for more than 30 years, but never before has she experienced these ring of rays like in her eyes. What should she do, really, Dr. Muiz? Is it very straightforward or?
No, it's not very straightforward actually, because we really need to know what this ring of rays mean, because there can be, what are the more common ones, for example, which I think is close enough, is probably the flashes of light. Flashes of light occurs when there's a bit of traction on the retina, which is the sensory of our eyes, which looks at things. So when there's a bit of pulling in the muscles, you get like a shoot.
Flashes of stimulation.
Stimulation, yeah. So this happens in, it occurs commonly, or normally in people who are, when they move their eyes too fast at the later age, people of a later age. So because the gel moves a bit slower than the eyeball, so there's a bit of traction and they can get flashes of light. So those are the ones we are not too worried about. However, what we worry about is when someone's just looking straight and they get flashes of lights continuously or occasionally, because that could be something else pulling on the nerves.
Right.
So it can be a start to what do you call
something more serious.
More serious, for example, a detachment, a retinal detachment, something that we do not want to get. So.
Which can be repaired if detected.
It can be repaired if we come very early. Yeah, that's very right. Early. Okay. And still, at the end of it, we cannot guarantee good sight.
Any recovery.
So the best thing is to actually get checked. Yeah. And if she's been checked and the doctor says it's okay, you know, I'm sure the doctor has made follow-ups, regular follow-ups with her. But just make sure that if this ring of rays become more frequent, more stronger, she needs to see her doctor again urgently.
That's right.
That's what I advise.
Like, what's the difference between that and floaters?
Okay, floaters are something that you really see inside your eye. It's like something in your eye. It just keeps floating, and it's black in color. It looks like worms. The Chinese call it mosquito.
Oh, right.
Nyamuk, you know, mosquito. Like things.
Because the Chinese have all sorts of names.
Because when they first get it, they'll be trying to catch it.
Right.
All these things we see, like floaters, flashes, we call it entoptic phenomenon, something that is happening within the eye. There's nothing external that is making these things we see. So floaters can also be a start of something more serious. But if you do have floaters, get it checked. If it's nothing, then it's fine. But if suddenly you have, you know, from 2 or 3 floaters becomes 10 or 15, then again, those are serious things. It could be bleeding in your eyes, you know, hemorrhages, or again, the detachment, risk for detachment.
All right. So go get it checked out, whatever it is. Question, how young does your child need to be to start eye screening and how often?
Ah, great question.
Okay, I wouldn't put an exact number to it, but you should look out for signs and symptoms for when you're possible that your children have got eye problems. You know how you used to say about not watching the TV too close, then you'll be needing to wear spectacles. For me, it's more like a chicken and an egg. Usually, they already have eye problems, you know, and need to be sitting close to the TV so they can see the TV. And if you, as parents, pull them back, you know, that 7 or 8 feet behind so they see in the better range, they're not comfortable and they just walk off. They don't enjoy it. You know. So that's the earliest signs of, you know, having visual problems in kids.
Okay.
Eye rubbing, you know, things that are also, or looking at a certain angle because they're trying to look at true things.
It's very interesting because is this true that everybody is born long-sighted, meaning everybody has got some amount of myopia until the age of about 9, and when does it actually become stable?
Is that true?
I think myopia is short-sighted, so everyone has got long-sighted hyperopia.
I apologize. Most children are born long-sighted. Yes.
Yeah, hyperopia. Because the beauty is the muscles in our eyes can, contract enough to overcome that long-sighted. And as they grow older, the length of the eyeball just makes up for that hyperopia, the long-sightedness.
Okay. Yeah. So it fixes itself usually by the age of 9 years old or?
9, 10, 12 sometimes. And then the most problems we see is those who are already myopic, and when they come to their puberty, difference between boys and girls, we all know that. So that's when the growth spurts become. So they would have, parents will have headaches because spectacles need to be changed every 6 months to a year. And the thing is, these are critical times as well for parents. It's just not good enough to be changing spectacles because we want to catch them sooner rather than later. We don't want them to have too long. I mean, it's not acceptable to have 5 diopters, 500 power and above nowadays.
Okay.
Because there are ways the doctor can help our children to prevent them from having high myopia.
So what is your advice then?
If you see your children power increasing too fast, or you're not happy with it, see your doctor. Just see an eye specialist.
Would it be enough to see opticians?
The opticians, optometrists, they can prescribe you new specs, but they might not have knowledge enough or the medications to help slow down the progression of myopia.
Okay. Yeah. So it is you're trained a little more.
Yes, we've got
a lot more.
we've got our drops, you know, our magic drops to actually try to help. But it's, I always discuss this, like, we work as a team with the parents, the mother, the children, and we have to, you know, appreciate what we are going through. And the drops I give do have, you know, some bit blurry.
Well, presumably, I mean, you make the diagnosis that if it's something a lot more complicated, you will do any surgical intervention, right? I mean, would you not agree that the vast majority of parents will probably just take their children to see the optician first as a first line, and then they get referred on to see you if they feel that something is a lot
because
more
because coming to see you is very late. We have to take number and wait such a long time.
And then there's all the opticians that happen in supermarkets.
We've got the optometrists, which is one step higher than the opticians, and they are well trained to look for eye disease.
Would you like to explain this to the listening public?
Yes. Optometrists, spectacle shops, okay, do have optometrists on duty. They might be able, if you go just to check your eyes for spectacles, they might be able to detect something more than just, you know, myopic or hypopia. Then they would advise necessarily. They should be advising necessarily. I used to teach them as well. And
presumably in Tun Hussing On, you have a center to train an optometrist profession.
Yes, yes. Most of the eye centers, they've got ophthalmologists coming in to teach the diseases of the eyes, and they know. And we've got lots and lots of referrals from them. They are supposed to be our first liners.
Yeah.
They are supposed to be our first liners. But certain complicated things, we still need to see the eye specialist.
Okay, last question. How about yoga exercises for the eyes? I didn't know that they had yoga exercises for the eye.
I have a big feeling this yoga exercises for the eye came from a viral WhatsApp video about a lady doing squares, circles, doing, you know, left, right, up, down. I think there's no truth to that.
Oh, right. Okay. What does it even mean, right?
You've never. I really assume you've never seen that video. It's because there's a picture of a Caucasian man doing, I mean, a Caucasian lady with blonde Caucasian lady doing the eye exercises. So it must be true. Okay, yeah. So the other thing, just on that line as well, social media does have a lot of dubious things going on with the eyes.
With the eyes.
And we at the society, as a member of society, we are doing our very best to curb these issues. Mm-hmm. And because they are cost a lot. And recently there was someone doing surgery on the eye, and suddenly now no more myopia.
Mm.
The thing is,
if quack doctors.
Yeah, quack doctors. Yeah.
Okay. Some Beaumont.
Didn't want to say that, but you said it, not me. But that's true. The thing is, it's not safe. You know, right, it's just not safe.
You don't want to take risk with your eyesight with somebody who is not qualified to.
I've looked at some of the comments on Facebook with regards to that. So most of them, because LASIK is expensive to most people.
Right.
To most people. So this is, you know, less than 100 ringgit.
Right, you know. Yeah.
So it just...
But just, it's not worth it.
It's not worth, really. Yes. That's just not worth it.
Okay. I mean, you know, I mean, we're running out of time, but I thought that there's one thing I want you to elaborate on. You began the program talking about how well-structured and how well-supported the blind community is in Malaysia. Presumably, these are by charities, right? Okay, for those people, you know, like a lot of blindness charity and that sort of thing, I wonder whether you can, you know, tell the public for In Aid of the World Sight Day, you know, if someone who wants to contribute financially or their time towards charity that help people who has got, you know, visual impairment or also blindness, what sort of charities do they do? And then, you know, what sort of advice would you give them?
I mean, the strongest charity organization for blindness in Malaysia is the Malaysian Association of the Blind. They actually, if someone is newly diagnosed with being blind, they have actually people who can actually go to the homes of these people and talk to them, you know, because they know it's a psychological effect, everything. You know, these people who just got blind because for any reason, diabetes or glaucoma or accidents, trauma, they will be just stuck to themselves. So they actually got people going there. They are blind people themselves, go to their houses and you talk to them and then get trying to slowly bring them back to the community.
Right.
And they've got hostels for the blind to stay where they can learn to do massages. They've got braille courses, using computers for the visually impaired, and they sell, what do you call this, low vision aids.
Right. And all these are funded by charity.
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Your message, Dr. Moyes, on this World Sight Day.
Okay, for the World Sight Day, me as Vice President of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology would like everyone to be more, take more proactive action in taking care of their eyes and not just themselves and your relatives, especially inside those who have got diabetes. To make sure that they've got their regular checkups and not let it become worse than if they have anything going on.
Okay, George?
Yeah, I guess for the World Sight Day, you know, if you have your sight, treasure it, and then and also have your sight and have your vision.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for joining me today. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, and Dr. Moyes Mahyudin, Vice President of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.